Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. It's usually about this time that I explain how much fun we're going to have on the show and how exciting and interesting it's going to be. It's going to be interesting, but I'm not necessarily fun. This week and next, we're going to tackle the topic of cybersecurity for the built environment. And for any of you paying attention, which most people are, the last few weeks have been pretty difficult as it relates to cyber. We've had the Colonial Pipeline attack, which shut down the East Coast from gas distribution. And here on the West Coast, we've had a major health organization, Scripps in San Diego, basically have five hospitals shut down for going on 3 weeks now. One paid ransomware and the other apparently is not. So this is building in frequency, it's building in intensity. And all the experts that I talk to on a pretty regular basis say things are not going to change in the foreseeable future, and things could possibly get worse. So we decided to look around and find some folks that really know what they're talking about. We've got Lucian Niemeyer, national security expert and CEO of the Niemeyer Group. And he's an Air Force vet, former Senate committee staffer, and most recently an assistant secretary of defense, actually working at the Pentagon and the White House, dealing with a full range of threats of our nation, including cyber risk for all the critical infrastructure. And then an old friend who's helping us, been helping us with cyber for a long time, Billy Rios, founder of WhiteScope, one of the world's, which is one of the world's most respected experts on emerging threats as it relates to cyber. He was a startup and a co-founder who he says survived the acquisition, senior level ex-Microsoft and Google security manager, and winner of what he calls the Pawnee, or is pronounced Pony Award, the best security research in the industry. Fascinating guy, stories, some he can tell us and some he can't. So before we get started, we're gonna show you a brief video on the pipeline hack to build some context for the show. And we come back, we're gonna have our two great guests.
On Monday, the FBI reported a criminal group based in Russia called DarkSide was responsible for the cyber attack that led to the shutdown of America's largest fuel pipeline, which stretches over 5,500 miles from Texas to New Jersey. The interruption led to panic buying and empty pumps before the Colonial Network came back online after the company paid a ransom of nearly $5 million. The attack raised new questions about the urgency of cybersecurity as bad actors target American business and infrastructure. NBC technology correspondent Jake Ward has more in our Sunday Focus.
It set off panic from the southeast all the way to the mid-Atlantic. The May 7th cyber attack not only threatened millions of Americans' fuel supply for cars, furnaces, and airplanes, the effects have been rippling outward ever since.
Waiting here for 45 minutes just to get gas.
Gas prices soared above $3 per gallon, the highest level since October 2014. The attack by Russian hacker group DarkSide shutting down the nation's largest gas pipeline. The latest example of just how vulnerable these targets are. Hospitals, small city governments, even major manufacturers across the country have been crippled by these kinds of attacks. The January SolarWinds hack of roughly 100 companies and a dozen government agencies did widespread damage.
The energy sector, which, you know, powers everything from emergency services to mass transit, is under increasing attack. In fact, IBM says that it's now the third most attacked sector after manufacturing and finance, up from ninth place just a few years ago.
A ransomware attack typically involves fooling employees into downloading what looks like a software update or an email attachment, and that then takes control of a system. The software is complex, but the strategy is simple. Scramble data on the company's servers and offer to unscramble it again in exchange for money.
Ransomware is probably the leading cyber attack at the moment. It is one that's highly profitable for the attacker and very easy to do.
As of Thursday, Colonial Pipeline said it was fully up and running again after the company paid nearly $5 million in ransom, a U.S. official told NBC News.
All right. So with that context, let's bring on our guests, Lucian Niemeyer and Billy Rios. Hey, guys. Good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you, Jim.
Billy, I don't know if we can hear you yet. So before we get started and talk about the hacks that we've recently seen in the last couple of weeks, can you guys, starting with you, Lucian, Give us a little background, where you've been in the cyber journey, where you are now, and where you're going. I want the audience to fully understand why this topic is important to you.
So I started out really looking at the cyber issue when I was on the Senate Armed Services Committee professional staff as at the time, and we've been struggling, as you know, for decades to come up with a comprehensive national cyber legislative strategy on not only protecting essential government services, but ultimately the country. We're still working on that. We obviously always run into some privacy issues, and that's been the big stumbling block. But moved on to the Department of Defense, where as an assistant secretary, I was directly responsible to the Secretary of Defense with working on the critical infrastructure within the Department of Defense. Spent a lot of time at the National Security Agency in doing that and seeing where we truly had vulnerabilities and how we get after those vulnerabilities. And then since then, I worked that same issue at the White House. And then since January, I've actually formed a nonprofit dedicated to raising cybersecurity standards for operational technologies, the technologies that can actually hurt us, and looking at a framework to improve the human safety and the security we need as a nation.
So to be clear, not enterprise cyber issues, but infrastructure cyber issues.
Yeah, really what you're looking at is it's one thing to have your data taken or intellectual property, nothing to have a cyber attack that can truly hurt you or affect your physical safety or create a quality of life issue like what happened with the Colonial Pipeline.
Okay. Billy, a little background. We're still not hearing you. If you're on mute. Hopefully you haven't been hacked.
Yeah, it's dark side, Jim.
Yeah, yeah. They know we're talking about it and they're coming after us. All right, well, while you're trying to figure that out, I'm going to go to Lucian with a couple other questions. Lucian, in preparing for this RealCom Live, we talked about, some of the specifics about the pipeline hack. And there's some misconceptions that it was more of the OT side, but as in our conversations, it had a lot more to do with the enterprise side. The billing, if you will. Can you give the viewers a little understanding of what actually happened?
Sure. In the world of cybersecurity, it's tough for folks that don't have an understanding to realize we have information technology systems that kind of do everything from billing to processing of data, transactions, tickets. And then there's a whole other type of cybersecurity that relates to operational technologies, the controls that run your thermostats, run valves, run meters. So, and those two sometimes don't come together. In this case, as our society is becoming smarter and more integrated, they're starting to mesh. So what happened in the case of the Colonial Pipeline is the bad actor went after seizing IT data, as well as some of the IT systems within Colonial. But in doing so, it had a physical impact. And that is the concern that was originally supposed to be a data attack turned quickly into the need to shut down pipeline the system because of the threat it could have if it had gone further into the valves, into the devices that could potentially create a catastrophic condition for Colonial. So what Colonial had was an attack to their system to include their payment system. Out of preponderance of caution, they went ahead and shut down a pipeline, but also because they were flowing gas, once the bad actors took that IT system, they were flowing gas to customers without a way to bill them. So it was both an economic response, a business response for them, but also out of preponderance of caution to make sure that that attack could not go further into the controls that are critical to the pipeline and critical to human safety.
But at the end of the day, it shut down pipelines, right?
And yeah, absolutely. Regardless of what the actions were. And I guarantee you, the bad actor, DarkSide in this case, did not have any intent of creating a national headline. They just wanted to get their ransom to go away. But in Colonial's response, they had to take the proper precautions to protect human safety.
Right. Billy, do we have you?
Yeah, I think I'm on now.
Very good. Wasn't a hack. That's good. So give us a little bit of your background for context.
Yeah, I'm Billy. I've been doing cybersecurity pretty much all my adult life, really on the practitioner side or operational side. Had a couple startups that I founded. One got acquired. Worked at Microsoft as a security program manager for Internet Explorer. I'm sorry, I'll just throw that out there right now. I worked at Google as well as a tech lead. I ran a team of 9 engineers just dealing with any kind of externally known security issue. But really deep into research, really close with my friends at the DOD. Have a background in the military. I was an active duty Marine. I'm actually a director of operations at a cyber operations squadron, you know, someplace on the West Coast. So know that side really well and just kind of find a passion of mine to kind of be on the operational side.
So from your vantage point, are you seeing an increase in number and an increase in sophistication of these attacks, specifically on the OT side, on the infrastructure side? Are you seeing, tell us what you're seeing out there in the streets.
Yeah, I think Lucian brought up a really good point. So what we saw at Colonial was actually an attack of basically an IT system. And so we've seen that for quite a while, right? And so, but that IT system had cascading effects that actually affected the OT, and that the organization decided they wanted to shut down just to be safe, right? So what's interesting though is that the state of the art has kind of moved past that, right? And so the state of the art is actually on those devices, on those embedded systems. And so in the case of Colonial, let's say they attacked the billing system, but the state of the art is actually attacking the actual pump system themselves or the pipeline systems themselves, right? And so those are really difficult to recover from. And so I think we're kind of at a point right now to where we're seeing the IT side of the house, just because the attackers don't need to go further than that, right? And to get their money or to get their ransom, to have the effect that they want. But I think eventually we will see that. And when that day comes, it's going to be a little more tricky to kind of get out of these situations.
In getting ready for next week's conversation, which is an extension of the cybersecurity conversation, we were talking about, you know, a piece of equipment going into a building has got various components inside it. The supply chain inside that box is complicated, right? Components coming from everywhere. There is at this South Dakota State University's got a cyber practice focus, you know, and they've got protocols to look at equipment, rip it apart, you know, down to a component level. But I mean, for the average building owner operator, that seems almost like an impossibility. I mean, how complex is this going to get? Lucian, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, sure thing. Look, I think we're looking at a whole new generation of what they call property technology, prop tech. And it's really built around reducing the operating costs for a building owner operator. And so embracing smart technologies is not just in a building, but it's in our cars. I mean, in a typical car, there's over 3,000 chips right now. So we society, and we want to see a more integrated, smarter, convenient environment for us. In our homes, we're putting in Ring, we're putting in electronic baby monitors, we're putting in smart TVs, all these things that we really love, we want, but we don't necessarily have the security and safety framework built up around that. So you're right, it's complicated for a building owner to know, okay, what am I putting in? It's gonna make me more efficient. It's gonna reduce my costs and raise revenue, but I also need to see where it creates vulnerabilities. And that's really where that building owner might need some help from others, guys like Billy and I, who can say, okay, here's how you can make yourself safer in addition to be more efficient.
Right, and I know a lot of building owners will say, well, you know, that's a pipeline or that's a hospital. You know, really won't impact me. But we just got a story coming out of Israel. A portfolio owner here of the States has a building in Israel, and by accident, an infected laptop was logged into the system. I believe it actually started in a parking system and then made its way and shut down every building system. It's been over 3 months, and apparently the elevators are still not working and they're having some issues. So we now know that it is absolutely possible for malware, ransomware to get into physical equipment, and in this particular case, shut it down. And what does a building owner do for 3 months when elevators don't work, door accesses don't work, HVAC heating, you know, doesn't work? It could be catastrophic. And so what we're seeing is a move from enterprise to infrastructure. And guess what? It's going to be all of the above, and it's going to get pretty complicated. So
Real quick. To that point, I mean, really, either a ransomware attack on a building owner, or just having an email saying, "Hey, you know, we have control, or we could take over control of your elevators." How does a building owner respond to that? That is going to be a bad day for any apartment owner or apartment building owner in New York City when all of a sudden, just out of caution, they have to shut down the elevators, and then they have to explain to their tenants why they've done it, even if they know there's no attack, but because they got an email. They have a responsibility to protect the safety of their tenants. It's just going to create havoc and fear and uncertainty, not just for the owners, but for the occupants.
Who wants to ride on an elevator that can be hacked, right?
I mean, yeah, I think it's a solid point. Like as we kind of saw in the Colonial attack here, there's a social piece to this as well, right? And so there's like lots of panic buying, and obviously it's got attention of a lot of different places. And so, you know, organizations have to think about that as well. And then if we look at like what was targeted in Colonial, it's pretty amazing because if you target a billing system, you actually kind of get hit with this double whammy, right? To where you're losing resources. Obviously there's, you know, if they kept the pipeline on, you know, oil would continue to flow to their customers, which means that they're actually losing that resource and they're not getting money, right? So it's kind of a double whammy. And I think the same could happen to a lot of facility owners as well, right? Like if a building system were to be compromised where electrical, you know, services are still flowing. So somebody's still paying for that, right? You're going to have to pay the provider for that still, yet you're not getting any income for that. So it's kind of a double whammy against you, right? So, and that will force you into these situations like that, right? And so it's definitely something to think about.
Well, so now we've set the stage on how bad it is and how bad it's going to get. Let's take a brief break and hear from one of our sponsors, and we're going to come back and talk about some solutions. But before we go to break, I just want to mention this sponsor is not just a great sponsor for this episode, but an industry supporter, someone who is totally committed to cybersecurity in the built environment, has been a longtime supporter of both RealCom and IBCon. So with that, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Finding the best way to protect your business from cyber intrusions and keep up with evolving technology can be difficult. But one company believes it all boils down to three words: prevention, awareness, and action.
5Q provides the full spectrum of managed tech and cybersecurity services. Everything from building cyber assessments to remediation of those issues that they find in the buildings, and then to 24/7 monitoring with a security operations center that's kind of security as a service. Our laser focus is on commercial real estate, corporate real estate. We all come from a background of serving that industry.
When an organization really wants to focus on the value add of their business, then we take the burden of the IT off their hands. We take ownership of the technology aspect for them, and we help them support and grow their business together.
All right, it's good to know that we've got organizations laser focused on cybersecurity as it relates to buildings. So, all right, with that, let's bring back our two guests and continue our conversation. So guys, see, as you can see, 5Q responding to a market need. And we just need more and more of that. Billy, you've been in this space doing that for a long time. So, all right, we've laid the groundwork. It's pretty gnarly out there, right? What do we do about it? Let's start with you, Lucian. I mean, you've got some very specific ideas on what the industry needs to do Monday morning to, you know, start to get a handle on this threat.
I think the first thing to see is that what happened to Colonial could happen to anybody. It's not just nation states, it's cyber criminals. It's the, you know, it's the cyber terrorists or, and even the, you know, the cyber hackers who just want a quick hit, want a quick fix of a ransom. So they'll go after any asset that's willing to pay them. The concern we have is the risk goes way up when you start dealing with operational technologies. So what do we do? What we do is we incentivize those investments needed to reduce the risk in companies like 5Q and others. And how can you do that? A CEO is really not in the business of trying to mitigate risk, they're trying to raise, gain revenue or expand business, but trying to grow their enterprise or their asset. So we have to make it compelling to them that investing in cybersecurity can give them a return on investment. From the organization I'm working with, buildingcybersecurity.org, we're working with the nation's leading insurance brokers and underwriters to incentivize that action. Kind of like when for your home insurance, you get a rebate or a discount for when you have a physical surveillance system in your house. You check that block, you get a discount. Mm-hmm. For car insurance, you're a good driver, you get a discount. So the goal is to incentivize improvements to the operational technology security and to get, then get a discount, not just through cyber insurance, but through property and casualty insurance. That's a $400 billion industry right now. And that's where you're going to see claims. When fire suppression system starts going off and property gets ruined or people get hurt, those claims are going through the roof. How can you incentivize protections in a building in order to mitigate the risk from those types of attacks?
So what it sounds like you're saying is, you know, we started in the Wild West, you know, things just happen randomly, people learning, becoming more aware, but it sounds like the industry is responding. You know, from an organizational standpoint, insurance organizations, new firms to fight the cybersecurity issues.
They have to because they're getting hit right now. A lot of these ransomware attacks are being paid by insurance companies. They're not being paid by the company themselves. I mean, it's a cyber claim. The insurance industry right now, particularly the cyber insurance industry, is in a free fall. Rates are going up significantly. Premiums are going up significantly because the risk is expanding so quickly because of the threat of ransomware.
So, Billy, I first met you 5 years ago when you wrote that article and talked about some holes in a major manufacturer's building automation system, and we've had you at our events over the years, and you've got your ear to the ground every single day. What do you tell, let's say, a building owner who's got, you know, not a huge one, let's go for a moderate size. They've got 10 buildings, different cities. They don't have a big IT staff, and they want to do something. You know, what do they do Monday morning to start down this I need to protect my building journey?
Yeah, I would say two things. Number one, I think over the last like 10 years, one of the areas I've actually seen the most maturity from cybersecurity is actually like government-private partnership. And so, I mean, if we look at what's happening at Colonial today, U.S. government's involved, right, in a lot of different ways. And so just understanding how you would kick that off, who your points of contact are, your local FBI field office. At what point does this become a national issue as opposed to just a business issue for yourself, right? And every time we do tabletops with like sporting associations and major manufacturing organizations or Fortune 500, that's one of the things that we always tabletop. Like, hey, at what point do you have to escalate this outside of your business to the government, right? So, because in some ways that they can help. The second thing is you can actually just inventory what your current risk posture is, right? So understand what your exposure looks like, understand how your systems are connected, understand kind of where your choke points are, what would do lots of damage to your organization, your business, your brand, your revenue, and understand what mitigations and kind of protections you have in place. And if you see weaknesses there, obviously try to shore them up, right? So, but you're not going to know any of that if you don't do an inventory or a canvas of what you have and what your exposures are.
Right. So there's a logical step, a logical process that they don't have to be overwhelmed. They can dip in their toe and begin. And P.S., some of the simplest solutions are personnel related, changing passwords. Like you said, understanding, you know, that you got a modem in a closet someplace that nobody knows about, right? I mean, we've heard that story over and over again.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Like some of the folks that we talk to, they actually have really big cybersecurity problems. Like they are dealing with nation state actors and things like that. But, you know, some of these problems, you can just take one bite at a time, right? So
exactly.
You don't have to solve the entire problem in a week. Just take a small chunk and just start iterating on that before you realize it. 2 years down the road, you're actually in a really good spot.
Well, the good news is you're probably not on the highest profile list for some of these organizations if you only have 10 buildings. So that's the good news. But you have, you know, but the point is get started today, little bite sizes and begin the journey. Lucian, we've only got a couple more minutes. And I know that, you know, as a board member of REC, the Real Estate Cyber Consortium, we've been in conversation with you guys. Can you give the audience a little understanding of what your organization's goals are so they can better understand?
Yeah, first of all, we're very proud of being able to be associated with RealCom and REC. That's a great honor for us. So we're a relatively recent organization, and we have one focus, is that we need to develop for all applications of smart technology a safety framework. We have to have a series of controls using existing standards. They can incentivize the installation of safety protocols while we're installing these smart technologies. It's that simple. Now, we're also aligned with insurance companies to offer an incentive for that, but we have to take what are the technical standards that are out there, NIST, Billy knows all these, ISA, IEC, you know, NIST standards, and translate them in a way and provide value for them. So a CEO says, I get it, I can make money off that, I can reduce my risk, I can get return on investment through my insurance. That is, to me, how we raise safety standards for the entire country and eventually the world. Because we're going to see smart technologies go everywhere in the world. The goal is how do you create that safety framework to go along with it without it being a government mandate or a compliance standard, which in my cases that I know of are not really that effective.
Okay, we are out of time, but I got one question from the audience I want to squeeze in. Should hackers who successfully attack critical U.S. infrastructure be considered a terrorist organization?
Billy, that's you.
Yeah, it's a tough question, and I think it's one that kind of points to the nuance of cybersecurity, right? So it's actually difficult to engage the government when a cybersecurity incident happens, right? To identify when exactly a hack of an individual company becomes a national security issue. You know, what are the authorities of the U.S. government when it comes to a cybersecurity attack, right? What is allowed by the individual organization if they're attacked by an organization outside the United States, right? So So a lot of these questions have nuance. They sound very simple, but they're actually very nuanced, right?
Yeah.
What does designating an organization a terrorist organization, what does that actually mean? And what does that carry with it, right? So it's a good question. And it's one that I don't think we can answer right away and just say yes or no, because there's a lot of gray area. But I like the way, and I like the thinking behind it, right? Because these are things that we have to think about, like, what is the criteria when an individual hack becomes a national security issue? When should the U.S. government step in, right?
Yeah, just one quick point there. Dark Side, the organization behind the colonial attack, they had a bad day. All they wanted was their $4 million and gone. They don't want SEAL teams coming after them. They don't want NSA coming after them. That's what's happening right now. And so, you know, they are now disbanded, and they may not even ever see any of that money. So I think we have to see what levers we have to go after these groups. And we have many opportunities. That's why I love what Billy said about continued collaboration between the public sector and the private sector on responding to this.
I'll know we've made some progress when we start playing offense as opposed to just defense, right? And I do feel there's a groundswell of people coming together to say enough is enough. So that's a real positive note. Guys, we could talk about this forever. Thank you so much. I know how busy both of you are for sharing. We're going to have another episode next week, continue the conversation. Hope you guys come on in and watch that episode. And you know we will be back in touch. Lots to do. So thank you again.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So with that, we move on to one of my favorite parts of our weekly broadcast, weekly news. But today we don't have Howard Berger. I believe we got Lisa Woods. Lisa, how are you?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good. I understand you're taking over today to share the news for Howard.
I am. There are big shoes to fill, but I will do my best to cover the news.
Well, let me get out of your way and you can get on with it.
All right. Thanks, Jim. So every Thursday, we send out our weekly briefing newsletter of the top stories touching real estate and technology. And in this segment, we highlight a few of those articles that we think are especially interesting or important. We also want to thank LinkSpring this week for sponsoring the week's newsletter issue. So the lead article in this week's newsletter deals with the industry's most innovative intelligent building projects as showcased on this show. There are five noteworthy projects that have incorporated some exciting technologies, and these projects are setting new standards in building design. So the first project that we're showcasing is the Milan Innovation District, which is a unique living lab in Europe that is setting new standards in sustainability, wellness, and safety. This is a Lendlease project. The next one is National Landing, which is a project near Washington, D.C., and one of the most innovative digital districts in the world, and also the site for the new Amazon headquarters. The investment that they've made in the infrastructure will establish this project as the first 5G smart city. And then we have the Sinclair Hotel, which is in Fort Worth, Texas. This one uses PoE to make a DC-powered building a reality and is the first truly low-voltage connected hotel in North America. Then we have the Fifth and Dinwiddie in Pennsylvania, which is a sustainable passive housing project where developers balance first costs with aggressive building performance goals and long-term operating costs to achieve attainable, sustainable tech-enabled housing. And then the final project that we're showcasing is the Multi-Green project, which intends to build 40,000 units of sustainable tech-enabled workforce housing apartments. They're partnering with Real Foundations, and they're establishing a scalable operating model and robust technology platform to support their development goals. So be sure and check out that article. The second story I want to mention in the news this week is one on the U.S. Department of Energy. So the DOE, working with the Lawrence Berkeley Labs, has developed a guide for grid interactive efficient buildings, which is referred to as GEB, which outlines the DOE's goal for the U.S. to triple the energy efficiency and demand flexibility of the building sector by the year 2030. The new roadmap defines technology attributes, integration considerations, and it also points out the barriers to achieving the full potential adoption and deployment of GEB. The guide also states that over the next 20 years, grid interactive efficient buildings could deliver between $100 and $200 billion in savings to the U.S. power system and cut CO2 emissions by 80 million tons per year. So this is about 6% of the total power sector emissions. There's also a link in the article to the complete report if you're interested in more of those details. The final story that we want to highlight in this week's news is about Oxford Properties and how they've been quietly developing an artificial intelligence technology that quantifies the value of a property for not just the property itself, but the environment around it. In their eyes, this is the secret sauce. So this initiative, which they call Project Alpha, uses information from around 50 different data sets to create models of properties in markets around the globe. So what's really unique about this is that they're using the digital twin technology to layer in parts of the data landscape and placing numerical values on aspects of a potential investment. In this way, they're reconstructing digital twins of the environment and surrounding buildings in addition to digital twins of the structures themselves. So make sure you read that article. It's pretty fascinating. So, Jim, I think I'm probably out of time. There are a lot more stories of interest in this week's newsletter issue, so make sure to check it out. But
I think you did a wonderful job filling those shoes. Howard better watch out. He's got somebody nipping at his heels. Always great to see you, and thanks for filling in for Howard.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Be well. All right, before we wrap the show and talk about next week, let's hear from our final sponsor. All right. And with that, I would like to first of all say thank you to 5Q, this week's session or episode sponsor, as well as our two great speakers and all the sponsors, as well as the RealCom team for putting this together. Next week, we are going to continue this conversation on cybersecurity. We've got a shortage of folks able to fight this battle. So we're going to have Ashley Podoronsky from Dakota State. She runs the Advanced Cybersecurity Program. And Neville Teagarden from AI Capital, who's involved in cybersecurity, the investment landscape, what companies are coming up, they're going to be able to fight this battle. So next week, we're going to continue this discussion with two great folks, and we look forward to having you join us. And with that, I say thank you, have a great day, and we will see you next Friday. Be well.